novels is J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit. When I was back around Caden and Charlie's age, I think I read The Hobbit about 13 or 14 times. I just was mesmerized by the book. And part of the book is called There and Back Again. It's the story of Bilbo Baggins going on his adventure. So for the next 4 weeks, we're going to talk a little bit about the sabbatical that I took last fall, the adventure that I went off on. And so I decided aptly to name this sermon series, There and Back Again, A Pastor's Tale. I want to talk today a little bit about the beginning of the sabbatical. Back in August, you all blessed me with the opportunity to take a four-month sabbatical. Sabbatical is a time of purposeful rest and recuperation, a time to unplug and disconnect from the daily routine of ministry and allow yourself to decompress. Now, as we get into talking about this, a few things I want you to know about ministry, at least from my perspective. When I became a minister 17 years ago, I knew what I was getting into. It's a lot of work. It's long hours. It's unpredictable. There are times where it is not easy. There are times where it feels like I'm smacking myself in the face with a frying pan. But I love what I do. And I believe it was a calling when I answered that call 17 years ago. I have never regretted it one time. I love being a minister. I love all that entails. But it is a lot. And being able, after 7.5 years of serving in this congregation, being able to take purposeful time off for rest was an amazing gift. It was so important. It was just so life-changing. I know that some of you wondered what it was exactly I had done to deserve a four-month vacation. It wasn't entirely like that. Now, certainly, during that 4 months, I took some vacation time with my family and did many wonderful things, and we'll talk about some of those. But a sabbatical is more than vacation. It's more pervasive. It's deeper. It's so much different. Let me try to explain. About 8 years ago, before I came here to be pastor, I was the children's minister at First Light United Methodist Church in Gardner, Kansas. A friend of mine had started First Light about 7 years before that. He'd had several children's ministers. The children's program had gotten started and stopped and started and stopped. And he wanted someone to come in and kind of reorganize it and get it on its feet again. And he asked if I would help. And it was a part-time position, but we were in a place where I could try that. So I went down to work with them and spent about a year down there getting their children's program lined out. We recruited about 30 adults that helped to make the children's program happen. And it was a good group of folks, and I liked working with them. We had two services at First Light. We had one at 9 a.m. and one at 11 a.m., and we had children's church during both of those. And so I had to have adults lined out for both of those. And if I was going to be gone for any reason, I had to find people to cover my responsibilities. Well, it just so happens, around August of that year, my family and I were taking a vacation. We were on our way to Yellowstone, which we love. If you've never been there, I highly recommend it. And on the way, we had decided we were going to stop and spend an entire day in the Badlands of South Dakota. Now, my family's been to the Badlands 6 or 7 times. It's our favorite national park. Anytime we get the opportunity to go to the Badlands, we take it. Even if we're driving by going somewhere else, we stop in the Badlands. And so this particular day, we had decided to do an all-day backcountry hike. We had loaded up our backpacks with salty snacks and fruit that would travel well. We had extra water bottles that were clipped to our backpacks. We were ready to go. We had our walking sticks and our good wide-brimmed hats to keep the sun off our faces. We were going to spend 8 to 10 hours that day walking off the beaten path in the Badlands. We were so excited about it. We got up early that morning. We were in Chamberlain, South Dakota, which is about 2 hours from the Badlands. We got up and left the hotel by 6. By 8 a.m., we were standing in the parking lot of the Badlands. We were getting our backpacks on. The sun had come up. We were getting ready to head out. It's a Sunday morning, and my phone rings. So I answer it. It's Steve, the pastor at First Light. And he says, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm getting ready to walk out into the Badlands." He said, "Who's covering for you today?" Now, I knew I was going to be gone. I needed somebody to cover my church, children's church responsibilities, not just be there, but take care of everything that I normally take care of. So I had selected one of my parents. Actually, I had selected my best parent. His name was Alan, and Alan was fantastic. He had three kids in our program, and Alan was the kind of guy that when you handed something to him and he said, "I got it," you didn't have to worry about it again. It was taken care of, right? That's why I chose Alan. Because Alan was responsible. Alan could be driving to church that morning, break both legs, and I knew he would still get there and take care of the stuff that needed to get done. I was not worried about Alan. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, and Pastor Steve is calling me, and he says, "Where?" He goes, "Who's filling in for you today?" I said, "Alan is." He goes, "Well, it's 8 o'clock, and he's not here yet." Now, church doesn't start till 9, but because I was on staff, I always made sure I was there an hour early. That's just one of my quirks. I like to get places early. I arrive here on Sunday mornings between 7 and 7:30, even though our services don't start till 8:30, because I want to be here early. I want to make sure everything's in line. That's how I am. But I knew how responsible Alan was, so I said, "Well, he'll be there. He's just not there yet." And Stephen said, "Well, okay, if he's not here by 8:30, I'll call you back." I said, "If he's not there by 8:30, call him. I'm in the Badlands." But that's what ministry is like. It's all the time. Even when I was on vacation with my family in this remote area, I mean, literally 10 steps away, and I wasn't going to have phone service anymore, I had to take a call about ministry. That happens in ministry. It's just a part and parcel with what this is. All of the time, I am connected. I am plugged into what is going on. Even the things I don't go to that you think I don't have any interest in, I still know about them. So if there's a question, if there's a call, if there's a concern, I'm ready for that. That's what ministry is. When you decide to go into ministry, there's a tacit understanding. This is not a 9-to-5 gig. This is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all the time. I'm always connected to the ministry and mission that's going on where I'm serving. I'm always ready to respond when needed, always prepared to jump in when I'm called upon, because that's what I do. I knew that when I became a minister. It's not a job, it's a lifestyle. That's an old truism that we trot out when we talk about ministry, but this is who I am. I am the pastor of Marian Christian Church, and even as I'm away on vacation, I'm thinking about the church. I'm thinking about this program that we have to get going. I'm thinking about this sermon that I want to preach. I'm thinking about this thing. How are we going to stop the water from leaking into the fellowship hall? Those things are coming up all the time. Just 2 weeks ago, on Christmas Day, I'm celebrating Christmas with my family. We got up, we opened our stockings, we opened our presents. Yay! We're having a big breakfast. I made cinnamon rolls, and they didn't raise properly, so really it was like cinnamon lumps, but you know, neither here nor there. We're sitting there, we're enjoying that breakfast, and my phone rings on Christmas Day, and it's Dixie Wheaton, and she says, "I know it's Christmas." And I said, "Well, yeah, everybody knows that." And she said, "Lucy Walker fell down last night and broke her leg, and she's in the hospital." And I was like, "Oh, no." And I hung up the phone, and I got up, and I went to get dressed, and my wife said, "What's going on?" I said, "Lucy, who I just saw 12 hours ago at the candlelight service, is at KU Medical. I got to go see her." I got dressed and I got bundled up and I drove down to KU and I sat with Lucy and I held her hand and I prayed with her because I wanted her to know that she wasn't alone in that hospital, that her and Jim were not on their own there, that they were surrounded by the great cloud of witnesses, that we were praying for them and thinking about them, and that we were there with them, holding her hand, praying for her doctors and the surgeons and the nurses. I wanted her to know that. That's important. She's a part of the body of Christ, and I needed to reassure her of that. Because that's what I do. When the call comes, you respond. But that is also what made the sabbatical different. A week into the sabbatical, I loaded up my family. We headed to Denver for a week of vacation. We went out, we hiked in Red Rocks Amphitheater, we went to Rocky Mountain National Park, we rode that tram that very slowly goes up to the top of Pikes Peak, and then you stand up and you get all lightheaded because it's 14,000 feet. We did all that fun stuff, and we also went to the National Poetry Slam, which I'm going to talk a lot more about next week. But as we were there for that week, I began to notice something was different during this vacation with my family. I wasn't waiting for my phone to ring. I wasn't waiting to get an email or a text or a call that something had happened, something needed to be taken care of, somebody was hurt, somebody was in need. I wasn't sitting on that anticipatory edge waiting for the call to come in, and slowly I began to relax. And that was a new feeling for me, something I hadn't felt in quite some time. I could simply breathe and be. I didn't have to wait for what was coming. I could simply be in that moment. Several years ago, my wife and I were family teachers at Boys Town up in Omaha. We lived in a home. We had four boys in our home for a while. We had eight girls in our home later. When we had the four boys, we got a young man into our home. His name was Cedric. Cedric was 14 years old. He had a laundry list of issues. The most colorful being that he was a kleptomaniac. He stole constantly, almost not even aware he was doing it. He would acquire things. To add to that, his greatest superpower was that he only required 1 to 2 hours of sleep a night. Cedric was wired differently. I don't know how it worked. He didn't need sleep. So when everyone else laid their heads down and went to sleep, Cedric was still wide awake, still alert. And he would get up and he would wander about the house and he would get into stuff and he would steal stuff, and that was a problem. We couldn't have that going on. So we got a motion detector and we put it in our dining room, and at night I would turn it on. The motion detector faced into the house everywhere except for the boys' bedrooms and their hallway, which allowed them to get out of bed and go to the bathroom if they needed to in the middle of the night and go back to bed. But if they stepped out of that hallway into the living room or came into the dining room or the kitchen, that motion detector would pick it up, and it was connected wirelessly to a lamp in my bedroom. And if that motion detector got tripped, the lamp would start to flash. And I would jump up and I would run out into the house to catch Cedric at whatever he was doing. Oftentimes, Cedric and I would meet at the dining room table in the darkness. And I would say, "It's time to go back to bed, Cedric." Every night, Cedric got up and wandered. Every night, for 6 months, he got up and wandered. Every night, I waited for that lamp to start flashing. It wasn't a question of if it was going to flash. It was going to flash. At 11 p.m., at 1 a.m., at 4 a.m., at some point, that thing's going off. And I had to be ready to jump out of bed and bound out into the house to stop him from whatever he was getting ready to do. Every night, for 6 months, my body adjusted to the idea that at some point, I was going to have to be ready to go. I became a very light sleeper. Cedric was sadly only with us for those 6 months. His issues were just too much for our program. He needed much different, much deeper help than we could provide. So after he left the program, literally for years, I continued to have trouble sleeping soundly at night. My body was still ready for that light to start flashing. Still ready for the fact that I would need to be awake and alert and on the go at a moment's notice. For years, I had trouble getting past that. That's a lot of what ministry is like. Always being ready, always anticipating the need, always expecting the call. I'm plugged into what goes on in ministry because I want to be. I'm not complaining. It's part of what this is. And it's part that I do and I understand. But I'm always thinking about, when I'm in the shower, I'm planning out sermons in my head. When I'm driving to work, I'm thinking about, hey, could we do that program differently? Hey, how might we address that thing that we have? Hey, maybe this is a different ministry that we could try. All the time I'm jotting down notes or sending a text message or sending an email to somebody. Just yesterday, out of the blue, I emailed Amy DeCourcy about an idea I had. And I was like, hey, you were talking about this recently. What if we did it like this and changed this and did this to it? What do you think about that? I know it's Saturday and you've probably got other stuff going on, but I was just thinking about this. Wanted to get it out there. It's easy to get hung up in the mechanics of ministry, the mechanics of what we do. There's a lot of moving pieces sometimes, and we have to keep them all going at the right place and the right time. But sometimes when we do that, we miss the bigger picture. We miss that voice calling out to us. What the sabbatical allowed was for me to disconnect from that for a moment, to unplug from that hyper-vigilant attentiveness, and just for a moment, be. Instead of being ever on the ready to spring into action, I simply existed moment to moment, day to day. Not waiting for the phone to ring, but simply standing in the presence of God and saying, speak, Lord, your servant is listening. I got to truly stop and just relax, and it was amazing. It was amazing. My body relaxed, my mind unclenched, my spirit unfurled. I simply spent time being in God's presence. That first week in Denver, I started to feel it. I wasn't waiting for the phone to ring. I was simply asking, okay, God, now what? I wasn't thinking about the meeting that I had coming up or what to do about this or that or how we might address this problem or this opportunity. That's the best I can explain, I think, what the sabbatical meant, what it was for me. Yes, absolutely, there was vacation time in it. My wife and I spent 2 weeks driving around New England. It was amazing. We didn't go in there in the winter, so we were smart about that. But it was so much more than that. It was this journey that I went on, this journey where I didn't know the destination. I didn't know what was coming. I wasn't making plans, and I wasn't plotting stuff out. I was simply walking along saying, where are we going to go today, Lord? I got to lay all of the stuff down and just be. It was one of the greatest gifts anyone has ever given me, and that you trusted me and loved me enough to give that to me is humbling. Our 8 years together had brought us to a moment where we could pause, where you could allow me to have this time to step back, to unplug. And if there's anything that I got out of my sabbatical time, it was that I realized how important it is for us to pause. Our lives get busy and hectic. We get tied up with so many things, worried about this, thinking about that. Sometimes we miss that voice calling out to us. Our scripture today has Samuel in the temple, lying near the ark of God. And when God calls him, he doesn't realize it's God. He runs to Eli and says, Eli, you are calling me. And Eli goes, go back to bed. What are you doing? Three times before Eli catches on and says, here's what I want you to do. Just stop and listen. That's what Samuel does. The Lord calls again and Samuel says, speak, for your servant is listening. All of us lead lives of busy importance, of hurried responsibility. It's easy to lose sight of God in that mad dash, to not hear God's voice when it's calling to us, to miss those times where God says to us, here, I need you here. What I would ask of you is that you try to find that time in your day. I'm not asking for an hour of your time. I'm asking for a minute, 60 seconds, where you stop and you turn everything off and you turn off the TV and you turn off the radio and you turn off the noise and the cacophony that this world can be. And for just a moment, just a minute, You sit in the presence of God and you simply say, speak. Your servant is listening. That is what I would ask of you today. As we have come through the Advent season, now restart our journey together as pastor and congregation continue walking down this road that God has for us, that we take time along this journey to stop and be in the presence of God, to listen to what God is telling us, to pause the noise for just a moment. It'll still be there when that minute's up. We can go right back to it, to being rushed and hurried and running around, but for just a minute, just at some point today, some point this afternoon, seriously stop everything and just be for a moment. Open your heart, open your spirit up and say, speak, Lord. Your servant is listening.